This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
Welcome to the World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight, we're here with Heath, special guest Shannon, who hasn't been with us for a couple of months, Damien, our wonderful podcaster, and myself, Chris. So tonight, we've all heard about the term LGBTIQ, but what do we think when we see these letters? And do we think about what the I stands for? The I in this acronym stands for intersex and represents a portion of the gender diverse community that is often left out of the conversation altogether when we talk about the rights of same-sex attracted and gender diverse people. So, what does it mean to be an intersex person living in Australia or Taiwan or Uganda or Germany? Which country is the strongest player when it comes to recognising the rights of intersex people? And which countries leave the I out of the conversation altogether? Tonight, we will be discussing these issues and more in our international show on intersex people with Morgan Carpenter, who is the president of organisation Intersex International Australia.
This is Tiseke Kasambala from Human Rights Watch, South Africa office on the World Wide Wave.
Hello and welcome back to the World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. But tonight we are not going to just one country, but we are visiting 12 in the new report, Human Rights Between the Sexes, a study of the experience of interpeople in 12 countries. And we'll be talking to Morgan Carpenter, who is the president of organisation Intersex International Australia. But I thought to start off, we'd see some fun, fast facts today, not about a country, but about intersex people. So, unfortunately, in Melbourne and in Australia as well, I think the term gay and lesbian tends to be the go-to term when we refer to the LGBTIQ individuals. And obviously, this radio station is no exception. But when the discourse, particularly in law and policy, turns to the rights of queer community, it's always same-sex attraction, I think, which receives the most attention. And the rights of gender-diverse individuals, when they are discussed at all, are often couched in terms of the trans community. And issues specific to the intersex community are often passed over. So we're going to go through some facts about interpeople. Apologies to anyone who knows exactly what we're talking about and doesn't need this refresher.
Okay, so we're going to go straight to Mythbusters. So intersex is not about sexual orientation. Intersex people have a diverse range of sexual orientations. So intersex is not about gender identity. Intersex individuals may identify as male, female, intersex, both, between, or none of these.
Intersex individuals are persons who cannot be classified according to the norms of so-called male and female bodies with regard to their chromosomal, gonadal, or anatomical sex. Many forms of intersex exist and are seen as a spectrum rather than a single category.
And a bit of background on intersex people. Interestingly, they are treated differently by different cultures. In some cultures, some people are included in larger third gender or gender blending social roles along with other individuals. However, what's typically the case in most societies, intersex people have been expected to conform to either a female or a male gender role. Intersex babies have historically and still today been subjected to surgery to alter the anatomy of intersex infants. Intersex people have been known to ancient and pre-modern cultures. An example is one of the Sumerian creation myths from more than 4,000 years ago.
So it looks like, just like other members of the LGBTIQ community, you know, evidence of intersex people has been around for thousands and thousands of years. And yet when we have conversations today about gender diversity and sexual orientation, they always seem to be left out. And I'm not sure why. Any theories?
I think they're just perceived to be the smaller group. So why would you bother? Does that make sense?
Majority dominating.
Yeah.
They're the minority of the minority, I'm afraid.
I also think it might be a little bit of ignorance as well, potentially not necessarily understanding what intersex is about. A lot of people struggle understanding what transgender is. And not realising that intersex is something completely different.
And I have to confess, actually, that tonight's been a bit of a learning curve for me. And when I was reading through this report and pulling out some fun, fast facts, there were plenty of things that I didn't know before.
I think another thing to note as well is just because everything gets thrown under the LGBTIQ umbrella, it you know, there may be some things in common, but there are also some things that are different. So I think a lot of people assume that because it's part of that umbrella, that everyone under that umbrella is well informed, and clearly that's not the case.
And I wonder how best to have the conversation then when you kind of want to mobilise as a single community, and yet the community is so disparate and so unique and so diverse, and that's a wonderful thing as well.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, hopefully these are questions that will be explored and answered when we speak to Morgan Carpenter next.
This is Audrey Gochran, the Director of Amnesty International's Africa Programme on the World Wide Wave.
Welcome to World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. But tonight we're not in a specific country, but we are looking at intersex people and the human rights abuses against them all around the globe, and in particular looking at the 12 countries recently covered in the Human Rights Between the Sexes study. Joining us, we have Morgan Carpenter, the president of the organisation Intersex International Australia. Morgan, are you there?
I am here. Thank you.
Hi, Morgan. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
If we could start off, I hope you don't mind, if you could perhaps give us a crash course in perhaps some misconceptions that you commonly get about intersex people, and also maybe an overview of what intersex is.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, like, it's a bit funny being on an LGBTI program where I'm still asked to do that.
I know, it's really unfortunate.
You know, what is it like being gay? I mean, what makes you gay? Okay, being intersex is a biological phenomenon. It's quite different to being lesbian or gay or bisexual or transgender. Intersex is the current word that is used to describe people who are born with atypical sex characteristics. So we might have anatomy or genetics or hormones that makes us not quite fit into a conventional male or female category. So it can be difficult to classify us as being either male or female at birth or at diagnosis. And people can be diagnosed in many different ways. People can be diagnosed with a trait or medical condition, because I define as being medical conditions, prenatally through amniocentesis testing or pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. Or people can be diagnosed visually at birth or later on in life through blood tests or ultrasound scans or all sorts of different kinds of examination. So there are very many different ways of being intersex.
And could you tell us a bit about this report that's recently been released, Human Rights Between the Sexes?
Human Rights Between the Sexes is a report that's been written by somebody called Dan Christian Gattas of OII's German counterpart, a sibling organization, and it's probably the first ever international comparative report looking at the human rights of intersex people in different parts of the world. And Dan looked at 12 countries, including countries in Europe, Australia, New Zealand as well, looking at Uruguay in South America, looking at Uganda in Africa, and within Europe, looking at a huge range of different countries as well, including Serbia, Ukraine, Belgium, France, and Germany. So there's quite a selection there, you know, countries in different kinds of, you know, different legal frameworks, different social frameworks, and different attitudes towards being LGBT. Well, what he found was a large degree of commonality in terms of how intersex people are treated.
I saw that the report has a focus on medical practices between different states around the world. Can you tell us a bit about what was found there?
Well, you know, medical treatment is pretty much the norm, because intersex is defined now by medicine as being a disorder of sex development. So being called a disorder, and in many cases a genetic disorder, means that you know, things that are not good happen from diagnosis. And what Dan says, looking at those 12 hugely diverse countries, what he found is that intersex individuals, and I'm quoting, are considered individuals with a disorder in all areas in which Western medicine prevails.
That's unbelievable.
they are more or less obviously treated as sick or abnormal depending on their respective society. And what actually happens in different societies varies. I mean, in the West, including in Australia, here and now, infants and children are subjected to what are called normalizing surgeries to make us appear like typical boys and girls. And in some parts of the world, that's less prevalent. But what can happen instead is infanticide. So infants are exposed in some parts of Africa, so that they die, and you know they are not allowed to grow up.
Okay, Morgan, it's Shannon. Just interrupting. Is there any sort of movement within the community to turn around the use of the word disorder?
There is. It varies around the world. I mean, I know in Uganda, because being associated with being lesbian or gay is counterproductive from a
existence
from
point
a
of
political,
view.
From a political point of view, existence point of view. They talk about quite bluntly about disorders of sex development or disorders of atypical sex characteristics. They have to be very clear that they're talking about genetic or other variations from what is typical. And in the West, it varies too. I mean, in the US, things are very complicated in the US because they have a private health system where if you don't have a disorder, you don't get treated.
And so for medical purposes, people need to put that label in themselves so that they're able to access different things.
Yes, or their families do. It's important to think about, you know, conceptually, if you can think for yourselves, what it would be like in Australia and what it would have been like over the past 30 or 40 years or longer if you were discovered to be lesbian or gay at birth. You know, how would that have changed your life?
That's a really powerful picture to paint. We're talking at the moment with Morgan Carpenter, who's the president of the organisation Intersex International Australia.
This is Eve from Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to the World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. So tonight we have a slightly special show. Instead of focusing on a single country, we're looking at the whole world and the rights of intersex people. And we're speaking with Morgan Carpenter, the president of organisation Intersex International Australia. Welcome back, Morgan.
Thank you very much.
So this report focuses on a huge range of countries. It doesn't just look at Western nations. It doesn't just look at Europe, but it goes to places like Taiwan and Uganda, Germany, Australia, New Zealand, among many others. What were the main differences between the regions? Were there any kind of commonalities between Asia, for example, as compared to Africa, as compared to Europe?
I don't know that we can make that good a comparison between different regions. I mean, when we have just like one country in South America studied, one country in East Asia studied, and that was Taiwan, I think it's quite difficult to make generalizations. But the generalizations that are possible to make are the ones about the impact of Western medicine and the global, worldwide stigmatization of intersex people.
And when you say the impact of Western medicine, are you saying that a negative impact has been imposed where before there was no negative impact, or just that there's been a difference in the way that intersex people are treated because of Western medicine?
What Western medicine does is it creates a model where if you are sick, then surgery can cure you. Or medical treatment can cure you. And often, you know, the treatment is surgical and it's often carried out during infancy if an intersex child is diagnosed as an infant. For example, I think in Taiwan, the information is, I believe, that kind of medical approach became adopted from around 1953, which is around the same time really that became adopted in Western countries. So I think what we have largely is a slight difference in countries where there is an established health system in countries where there is not a very well-established, you know, national healthcare system. And you can compare that situation in Taiwan with Uganda, where there is no national health insurance system. And only, I think, I'm reading this just now, 4% of the population have any sickness insurance cover. So what happens with diagnosis of an intersex child there is quite different to what happens in Taiwan or in Australia or in Europe.
Would you be able to expand on what might happen in a place like that?
In a place like Uganda?
Yes.
I would be paraphrasing parts of the report. In rural areas, most births take place at home or in a birthing centre with a traditional midwife. And births are traditionally feast celebrations. And if an intersex or a sick child is born, it gets thought of as a punishment of the mother in the present life or an earlier life.
Oh, my goodness.
So the child and the mother are expelled from the community.
Morgan, it's Damien here. I wanted to reflect a little bit on, you said, you know, Western medicine basically treats it as a disorder and seeks to remedy that. What was the status quo, I guess, before that methodology was adopted, and how does that contrast with the non-Western approach?
Before Western medicine tried to cure intersex people, it would have been more typical for people to grow up knowing that they're different and often to be treated poorly as a result. And there would have been stigmatization. I think there's always been stigmatization. But what's changed is the perception that being intersex can be cured in the West. Does that make sense?
Sure. So one could argue that really no progress has been made. They've just changed the lens through which they're looking at being intersex. But I don't know which one you'd prefer over the other, quite frankly.
Well, just picture this from your own point, from your own perspective, in terms of your... I mean, are you a gay man? Is that your background?
No, I'm not, actually.
Okay, so how would you identify?
Probably as queer.
Okay, so how are queer people treated now? And how were queer people treated in the 1930s?
I don't know.
Okay, but we know there's documentation to say that people were stigmatized if people's behavior was being seen as being not normal. The difference is that now you are permitted to be queer. You don't have to go through any kind of gatekeeping to change your body to make you more acceptable as a person in the society, are you?
Correct, yep.
What do you think it would do to you if you were made to physically appear different to be acceptable in society?
Sounds like a fairly awful reality to have to face.
We're lucky here. I mean, there are a few things that have happened in the last year or so. And the Senate Community Affairs Committee reported in October last year, in quite a major report, the first ever parliamentary report on medical treatment of intersex people. And it's a really important report for us. What it said in the report is things like this. This is a quote again. It says, here in Australia, the Senate said that normalization surgery is more than physical reconstruction. The surgery is intended to deconstruct an intersex physiology and in turn construct an identity that conforms with stereotypical male and female gender categories. And they also said, normalizing appearance goes hand in hand with the stigmatization of difference.
Morgan and Shannon, how does the community react to being told what they are needs to be cured?
That's a very difficult question to answer. The organised intersex community has become organised through magazine adverts and postage stamps, and then later the internet. And the internet really has seen the community properly establish itself. I mean, intersex variations are relatively rare, and people are always told that you're the only not always told. People are told that there are very few people like you, that you probably never meet anybody else like you. And trying to, you know, so there's that sensation that, you know, what you're going through is unique, and you have to deal with it by yourself, or you and your family deal with that. So in that context, I mean, finding other people is a huge relief, but there is also a huge amount of trauma that people carry.
Okay.
Because the treatment that people have experienced often is traumatizing.
And I'm glad there are organizations like Organization Intersex International who are helping to combat that kind of social isolation.
Yeah, I mean, we try our best. I mean, we are a small organization, and we offer peer support, and we also aim to change the legislative and medical context that affects us, really. What we want to try and do is create a situation, you know, like the LGBT community, where people are told it's okay to be who you are, it's okay to be how you are, and it's okay to feel good about what you've got, whatever your shape. So that's the kind of message that we're trying to put across.
Hello, this is Heath here. I was reading in one of the blogs, which is where I've gotten my music from, tonight.
Was wondering.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't just plucked out of my head. I did seek references. This person actually referenced a statistic that one out of every 2,000 births is intersex. That means that, you know, intersex isn't really that uncommon.
It's probably more common than that. I mean, it's hard to define, because the statistics are not readily available, I mean, any more than they are in terms of trying to work out how many gay people there are or LGBT people there are. And we do like the word LGBTI, because we're all trying to make society become more rational and welcoming of people that don't fit sex and gender norms, whether it's identity or behavior or attraction. But just to take a step back, I mean, looking at numbers, 1 in 2,000 might be right in terms of numbers of people that go through infant genital surgeries. But the number can go up to about 1.7% if you look at chromosomal differences as well as that. And those numbers are quite sketchy because there is a lot of evidence to say that terminations take place of embryos or fetuses with some of those intersex variations.
Morgan, are any parents in any culture at the moment, West or East, allowing their children to grow as intersex so they're not choosing surgery? Are you hearing of cases like that?
Yes, we are. I mean, it's an individual thing. I mean, many parents do find organisations like Ally Australia, and there's also the AIS Support Group Australia. And that's great, because when they talk to us, then they can at least see other people or meet other people or speak to other people on the phone and be reassured that, you know, that their children or they can lead happy, productive lives.
And Morgan, while we're on a slightly higher note, when I was talking to you earlier, you mentioned that Australia is actually at the forefront of positive legislation for intersex people.
Well, yes. I mean, the Senate inquiry is one really, really fundamentally important step toward ending the kind of treatment that still goes on in some cases here. But as well as that, last year, we now have intersex status in anti-discrimination legislation for the first time pretty much everywhere. That's a huge step forward. It recognises that intersex is not a sexual orientation or gender identity, but it's about biology and physical characteristics. So it's really important to us.
Fantastic. And is that recognition is that all official documents? How does that work?
That's discrimination legislation. There is also...
Oh, okay, amazing.
Yeah, there is also here federal guidelines on the recognition of sex and gender, which recognises that intersex people can identify as male, female, or X, which is a non-binary classification. And that's really helpful for some of our members. It's really helpful for some trans people as well. I think looking forward, I mean, we'd like to see states and territories adopt a situation where adults can opt in to choose a non-binary classification if they wish. And we'd also like multiple options to be available for people that need them as well. Some of our people, some of our members see themselves as being both male and female, for example.
Which is quite different from not identifying with either, I suppose.
It's very different, yeah. And it's a very personal choice, really. It's not a personal choice in some ways, is it? I mean, choosing to be male or female is not always a choice. I think it's more of a sense of discovery about yourself. And it's a bit more complicated for people who've had the kinds of experiences that intersex people have.
So, Morgan, if some of the things we've been talking about tonight are ringing particularly true for any listeners who haven't been in touch with your organisation, which is the organisation Intersex International Australia, could you let them know how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, we have a website which is oii.org.au. That's oii.org.au. And that's a good place to find us. We also have a Facebook page and a Twitter account, and our email addresses and other contact details are available through our website. And we're very approachable, really. I mean, I know that some of what I've talked about is quite serious and shocking for many people, but it's stuff that we actually live with and we get on with our lives and do our best to deal with what we're faced with.
And I'm incredibly glad that there's a peer support and also a, an awareness-raising organisation such as yours that's about. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Morgan.
Thank you for having me on the radio.
We've been talking with Morgan Carpenter, the president of organisation Intersex International Australia.
Hi, everyone. My name is Yang Fa from Singapore. You are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy, and lots of love to everyone at Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to the World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. We've had a lovely email in from listener Jade who says, great intersex discussion, we need to hear more. It is important to point out that as well as intersex, in the LGBTIQ, there is also those who identify as queer, and they identify as queer either as a sexual orientation and or gender. Those who identify as queer, gendered, or genderqueer can see themselves as both genders, neither genders, or third gender. And the important point is intersex are not alone regarding confronting gender issues. So thanks very much, Jade, for writing into us. Time for us to close up with a worldwide wrap.
I've got the Associated Press reporting on Friday, a gay man in Cameroon who was jailed for sending a text message to another man saying, I'm very much in love with you, and who was later declared a prisoner of conscience by Amnesty International, has died, according to a lawyer who worked on his case. Now, Roger Clean Maud, 34, died on Friday, roughly 1 month after his family removed him from the hospital where he had been seeking treatment for a hernia, his lawyer, Alice Nockham, said. Ms. Nockham also went on to say his family said he was a curse for them and that we should let him die.
Oh, that's heartbreaking. And can you read out that text one more time that he sent?
The text he sent and what he was jailed for was, I'm very much in love with you. Just
through
another guy.
To another man. Oh, that breaks my heart. That makes me really sad. Well, my worldwide rap is not much happier. It's back to Russia, unfortunately, where the top Russian cleric is seeking nationwide referendum on criminalising male homosexuality. So much like many other countries, sodomy seems to be a thing that only exists for male members of our lesbian and gay community or same-sex attracted community. And unfortunately, excuse my pronunciation, Vsevolod Chaplin maintains that gay relations between men pose a threat to the whole of society, but that, he very generously says, it should be left to the people to decide on the possible punishment for such actions.
Well, I'm actually going to be a little more positive. This one isn't new, but I thought it important in light of our intersex flavour to celebrate Germany for being the first European country to allow babies with characteristics of both sexes to be registered as neither male or female. So parents are now allowed to leave the gender blank on the birth certificates and in effect create a new category of indeterminate sex. The move is aimed at removing pressure on parents to make a quick decision on sex assignment surgery for newborns. However, some campaigners say the new law doesn't go far enough, but I still think it's a great step forward.
Fantastic. Well, it's nice to end on something positive. And I'd like to say thanks very much to Morgan Carpenter, who joined us tonight, the president of organisation Intersex International Australia, and also to Heath, Shannon and Damien for joining me in the studio. This has been Worldwide Wave. This is Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the Worldwide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.